Hey, this is Brent McManus, Denver Broncos Super Bowl champion, and you listen to The Scoop on AlScoop.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Scoop, AlScoop.com's podcast. This is Season 5, Episode 41, the Dirk episode, number 41. Are there any other? I'm with Sam Cohn, Sam Newman, Graham Foley, Kyle Galsnot with us this week. Graham was on the with us earlier on a Zoom call. We'll talk about that in a second. We were able to talk to Quincy Adam-Okoye and Jeremiah Williams. We'll talk about our conversation with them in a second. We'll play a couple of clips on the podcast. The full version of that conversation is up on the site now. So Graham was with us earlier, not with us now, just the three of us today. What other number, famous number 41s am I forgetting, guys? Are there any that?
Rice.
Who?
Glenn Rice.
Glenn Rice, that's a good one.
I don't know either. Dirk and Glenn Rice, so let's go with that.
Do you guys know who Keith Byers was? He played for the Eagles. He wore number 41.
Yeah.
You know, Keith Byers, Zane Smith pitched for the Pittsburgh Pirates, number 41. I don't know. Sam, you're not – Sam Cohn, number 41.
I'm trying to do some research right now. Not a lot coming up. Dirk is the go-to, I think.
Yeah. Strong opening for us this week on the scoop. as we debate the numbers.
Tom Seaver, there you go.
Tom Seaver, there we go. Jeez. Sam, you should be more offended as a Mets fan that we didn't spring Tom Seaver into the mix. But we've got some a lot of recruiting content for you this week as we head closer to June. We've got some basketball recruiting updates for you. Football's been busy too in terms of adding some transfers, a couple of new recruits. We'll talk first about the conversation that we have with Quincy Adam-Okoye and Jeremiah Williams, two of Temple's six-player recruiting class. Of course, there are a couple of transfers there, but there are two of the four high school players that came in with this class. And Quincy Adam-Okoye, of course, has a chance to add a lot of shooting for a team that needs it. Jeremiah Williams from Simeon High School in Chicago has a chance to really add some competition at the point guard position where he can play on the ball. And again, the full version of that conversation is up on the site right now. We did a Zoom call with them. They talked about a lot of different things, their relationship that goes back to eighth grade when they knew each other. Quincy lived in Illinois before he moved down to Georgia. Just on a brief surface level, guys, what stood out to you guys about that conversation? What are some of the highlights if you had to talk to people? You know, again, our subscribers have access to that full interview, but what, just thinking back to it now, what stands out to you guys about it?
The fact that Jeremiah is super into bowling outside of basketball. That was funny.
Laughing when he said that.
But seriously, I think probably the best answer that at least Quincy gave was about, and I think this is probably what we're going to play in a minute, is about feeling like a lot of Temple fans don't feel like they are where they should be, and Quincy kind of wanting to understanding that maybe they're not as great as they were back in the day, but he feels like they're not as, you know, they're better than what people are giving them credit for, and he thinks that they can make that step up and be that team with a lot of the incoming guys, and he feels like he really wants to be a part of Aaron McKee's vision for what Temple basketball and where their program is moving.
Yeah, what Sam said, I think Quincy had a very good answer. At the end, probably the best answer that we got out of him was kind of towards the end of our conversation where he really wants to put Temple on his back and you know, be that class that comes in and takes Temple basketball back to where it was in the 80s and the 90s. And, I mean, to hear a kid like that as a freshman to come in, it's kind of refreshing. I mean, a lot of incoming freshmen and players always want to be that guy, but you can tell by the way that Quincy said it and how he articulated that, you know, he's dead serious about it, and he has the type of confidence and playing ability to where he, you know, something like that could come to fruition.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting and kind of appropriate. We talked about this last week when Monte Ross articulated that, hey, we need to go wherever we can to get good players. Yes, we want to get players from the city of Philadelphia in the area. We will not stop recruiting in the city of Philadelphia, but we also know that we're going to have to recruit nationally, make a deep tournament run or two. And again, I'm kind of paraphrasing here what Monte Ross said, but I think people in the city have a hard time sometimes of really absorbing this and letting it sink in. We know that Fran Dunphy, as Temple's coach, got the team to the tournament plenty of times. But in 13 seasons, only two NCAA tournament wins. And Temple has not, and the most diehard Temple fans know this, and this is a sticking point for them. Temple has not been past the first weekend of the NCAA tournament since 2001. Of course, that was the team that went to the Elite Eight. It was John Chaney's last memorable tournament run. It was a team that really wasn't expected to get to the Elite Eight, but they beat Texas, they beat Florida, they beat Penn State, lost to a very good Michigan State team. And we're looking at 19 years, going on 20 years now, if Temple gets past the first weekend of the tournament. It's a long time. And again, it's not lost. You can tell that it's must be part of the recruiting pitch. When Quincy Adamakoya talks about it, in the interest of fairness and balance, yes, they talked to the previous staff with Fran, talked to Nate Pierre-Louis, J.P. Mormon, Dre Perry, and those guys about that same thing. They've just got to get there. But I think Quincy, in this clip that we're going to play here, and then we'll play a clip for you from Jeremiah Williams as well, when he talks about the Chicago basketball scene, here you can really hear in Quincy Adamakoya's voice that desire and that knowledge. It seems to be ingrained into his head that this staff and the program really, as he says here, they want to become the cool program in town again. So here's a clip from our conversation. Again, you can hear the whole thing, listen to the whole thing if you're a subscriber on the website right now. But here's a clip of our conversation again. Here's Quincy Adamakoya talking about getting Temple back to where it was in the late 90s, where they were consistently winning in the tournament, and what he sees for the future of the program.
Temple is the type of place where, you know, you put in the work, you're going to get the results. So as long as we stay in the gym and all of us put in the time that we need to, I feel like we can finish top of the conference and, you know, really have a shot at winning the conference. I don't want to shoot for nothing too low. You know what I'm saying? You never can shoot too high. So obviously it's baby steps to that national title, but I definitely do want to win the conference. I definitely do want to finish with a really nice record. And I want to win the Christmas tournaments. I want to win as much as possible and, you know, get that winning culture back on Temple's back and really put them on the map. I feel like Temple's a high major school. It's just, you know, they just have a dry spell. And I feel like we're the class, we're the era that is going to really put Temple back on the map and, you know, make Temple, quote unquote, cool to commit to again. You know, when people ask me, where you committed to, and I say Temple, they have to think, you know, it's not the Auburn, it's not the Oregon, the Kentucky, Duke, but, you know, Temple, my dad was like, you know, Temple was a really good school back in the day. It's just, you know, they fell off and now they're kind of getting back into that mode and, you know, taking over, getting back on the map is really what I'm trying to do at Temple my freshman year. And then, once we get back on the map, you know, make a shot at the national tournament, make a, you know, always finish top of the conference. That's always a goal. And just, you know, have Philly fans back on their feet. I see a lot of comments on Twitter about Temple basketball not being good. Temple has no hope. They should just reconstruct the whole team, and I don't think that's right. I think Temple still has a lot of life in it, and I feel like we're going to turn it around real quick once we get on campus.
All right, so there again, there's Quincy Adamakoya from Norcross High School down in Georgia. Again, a very good shooter who has a chance to make an instant impact for Temple in this coming season for a program that desperately needs shooting. Again, you can listen to and you can hear the awareness there on his end and that desire. You know, as he's saying, he thinks Temple's a high major program. We've talked about that before. They're kind of stuck in this netherworld of being a program with a high major tradition, high major resources, but being just on the outside looking in the American, they're not in a Power Five conference, but you can tell that it must be part of the recruiting pitch. These guys want to get Temple back to where it was in the late 90s, back to where they were in 2001 when they made that Elite Eight run. Also, again, in that conversation was Jeremiah Williams from Simeon High School. You're going to hear him in a second here talking about what it's like playing at Simeon, a program that's produced players like Derrick Rose, Jabari Parker. He, in the conversation, again, if you've heard the whole thing, you hear him talk about transferring as a junior to a senior, into a senior season, what it was like to transfer into Simeon, the transition that was involved, and then them winning a city championship. we talked to him in that conversation about how each area of the country has its own basketball identity. Philly has it, New York has it, Georgia has it. And here you're going to have Jeremiah Williams talking about what it's like to play in Chicago and what the basketball scene is like here. So, or it, out in Chicago, that is. So here's Jeremiah Williams talking about the Chicago basketball scene.
The two words that pop in my mind is toughness and pride. You know, if you're anywhere in like a CPS game, it's going to be fast. It's going to be scrappy, a lot of fouls. And it's a, like a dog eat dog world. So you can be the top team and you could play one of the worst teams and it'll still be a dog fight. Like teams, like the small teams like Farragut and North Lawndale and those teams, no matter where you are or who you are, you're going to be in for a dog fight. They're going to scratch you, push you out the air, elbow you, and it's going to be tough the whole game. So, you know, some people just adapt to it, and some people are just born to be in it. So, just toughness and pride.
So there you hear a little bit about Jeremiah talk about, you know, Chicago basketball, what that means. He talks about pride. He talks about toughness. And one thing that really stood out to me in my conversation with his Simeon coach, Coach Rob Smith, who, as John mentioned before, has coached guys like Derrick Rose, Jabari Parker. He's been around the program for a number of years. He said to me that what he thinks that Temple's getting in Jeremiah Williams is a kid that's going to bring Chicago toughness to Philly. And Temple specifically, Philly in general, Philly basketball is known for being tough. Talk about Temple tough, talk about Philly tough. So I think that it's interesting to see those parallels of Jeremiah being Chicago tough, and I think he's going to fit in perfectly just from talking to him and talking to his coach about the type of player he is. He's a junkyard dog, as Jimmy Fennerty would put it, or he's a guy that really wants to get after it. He can do a lot of different things on the floor. So I think the way he'll fit into this program is going to be awesome.
So again, there's going to be a lot more recruiting news along the way as the 2020 class turns to 2021. Again, obviously with the pandemic, it's been kind of an interesting time where the April open AAU period went by the wayside. There's talk that the NCAA is possibly discussing an evaluation period in August or possibly September, so we'll see how that goes. And now Temple has at least three, maybe four scholarships to give to the 2021 class. We don't know anything yet for certain. Maybe if some sort of unexpected grad transfer, someone who was immediately eligible popped up that would make sense to add for 2020, they could certainly do that. But at this point, sitting here in late May, it looks pretty likely that they're going to roll that 13th scholarship over to 2021, which means they would have four scholarships to give. So we know that locally they're in on Stevie Mitchell, very much in on Stevie Mitchell, very much in on Zach Hicks. In case you missed it last week, Sam did talk to Zach Hicks, the wing forward from Camden Catholic High School. Temple definitely has made him a priority in the 2021 class. You can check out that story if you're a subscriber. Again, just another friendly reminder that we are running that 60-day free trial offer that's good until the end of the month. For those of you who are maybe looking for a Father's Day gift, good idea. It's coming up in June. But again, that gives you a taste of what subscribing to the site is like. It gives you access to our message boards where if we get some good recruiting scoop, we typically post it on the boards first, then kind of hash it out into a story as we get more information. But you'll get the latest football recruiting information, basketball recruiting information. When we get exclusive interviews, those are subscriber pieces. So if you haven't checked out Sam's story on Zach Hicks, you certainly should. So we know that they like Zach Hicks. We know that they like Stevie Mitchell. We know that they like Sam Iamide. It seemed like literally not long after Sam Cohn's story on Sam Iamide, his recruitment really started to blow up. He's gotten LSU. He's gotten Virginia Tech. Who else am I forgetting? Who are he added? Hall. Yeah.
Someone else.
Seton Hall.
Providence.
A lot of high major offers. And again, as it will be for football, it's going to be really interesting for basketball. You know, Temple tries to get in, as the staff has mentioned, really early on some of these guys. We know who their top three local priorities are in terms of Stevie, Sam, and Zach Hicks. Another interesting name that we'll talk about here that's jumped into the mix, now they haven't offered him, Hasir Miller, the point guard from Newman Gureti High School. Newman Gureti won the Philadelphia Catholic League Championship. beating a loaded Roman Catholic team that has Lynn Grier, Jalen Duren, a team that maybe at the beginning of the season, people, I don't want to say, you never want to say that one team in the Catholic League is going to run away with the Catholic League title, but Newman Gretti beat a very good Roman team. And Miller had a Penn State offer, still has a Penn State offer, has some other mid-major offers. Temple jumped on a Zoom call with them. They haven't offered them yet. Again, we don't want to give away the whole story here. You can read it on the site now. Sam talked to him a couple of days ago, and we're going to play a clip from that interview. Here's another guy who is kind of a little bit of a tweener, where who knows what would have happened for him this summer with an evaluation period that would have been more traditional. If we weren't in the midst of a pandemic right now, he'd be gearing up for the July live period. He would have been coming off an April live period. Certainly showed that he could play in that Catholic League championship game, hit a bunch of key free throws down the stretch to help Newman Gretti win that game. Again, you can check out the whole story on alscoop.com right now. We're going to play a clip from that interview in a second. But Sam, just what stood out from your conversation with him? Again, Temple hasn't offered him yet, but they're definitely recruiting him. They're definitely interested. What stood out, you know, just from the conversation that you had with him?
That's another really tough, tough kid from the Philly area, West Philadelphia, I believe. So he transferred from
Martin Luther King.
Yes, Martin Luther King High School. So he was playing in the public league, transferred to the Catholic League. And there were two major things that stood out to me from talking to him. One is in the clip we're about to play about just the way he's been able to stay strong and been able to work on his game in quarantine, and how he's been able to stay mentally sharp, just as strong physically. But the other thing was he had a Zoom call with Temple this past weekend, and just hearing from him that he got a really good feel and a really good vibe from Temple's coaching staff. I think, to paraphrase, he said something along the lines of, like, in meeting someone for the first time, having first impressions, you really get a sense of whether they're in on you. And he said he feels like Temple was bought in on him. Those were his words. So it sounds like Temple's really interested in him. It wasn't so much a virtual tour of the campus. It was more so giving him insight into the program, letting him know kind of this Aaron McKee's vision for the future of the program, and giving him a sense of what Temple basketball is all about. So it seems like both parties on the call were really interested. He had siblings and family on the call. He had his high school coaches on the call. And he was a kid that wasn't a point guard. And then he, in his time at Martin Luther King, his coach, Sean Colson, really molded him into a really strong player. And then his game's only elevated since getting to Newman Gretti. So he's a tough kid, and I think he could be a really good get if Temple decides to go down that road.
All right, so we're going to play a clip from that interview again. Here is Sam. This is Miller talking about, you know, trying to stay sharp, how he thinks he's become a better player since that PCL championship game, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so here's part of Sam Cohn's interview with Hasir Miller. Again, the full story is up on the site right now. You can read it, but here's a clip from their conversation.
I can tell you from the last game I played, and something else, I'm a better basketball player. Mm-hmm. Not because I was in the gym playing all these hours, but since I've been home, I've been studying more and watching the game, and it really made me see things differently and how I can better myself. Just over watching this past season, watching other players and stuff like that. So that was
You talk about, you know, watching a lot of film, doing a lot of studying while you're in quarantine. What's life been like during the pandemic and trying to stay in shape in terms of working on your game?
It's been tough. I feel like I'm really mentally strong. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm going to make sure I'm going for runs, exercising. When I can't get to the gym, I'm doing my push-ups, doing my sit-ups, just exercising, staying active, ball handling. It don't take nothing to go in front of the door, you know, half an hour, making sure you handle tight, improving.
All right, so again, you can check out Sam's full story with Hasir Miller on the site. Again, three, possibly four scholarships for Temple to offer to the 2021 class. And then also a reminder, again, as we talked about before, it'll be interesting to see how much of this class is made up of local or somewhat local recruits with maybe someone like Miller or someone like Stephen Mitchell plays out in Reading, Sam Iamidi at the Phelps School. But they're also recruiting nationally as well. They've been linked recently to recruiting Jalen Billingsley out in Ohio, plays at Lutheran High School East out there, a guy who also seems like a guy that would have maybe started to blow up this summer if there was the standard April and then July open periods for AAU stuff. Temple's offered him, Penn State has offered him, Eastern Michigan, Ohio, West Virginia has offered him, Dayton has offered him. You know, a Dayton offer now takes on a different meaning now. You know, Dayton was always a respectable program in the A-10. Who knows what they would have done in the tournament this year, but when you have a lottery pick on your roster, Dayton becomes big-time competition, so we'll see what happens there. And, of course, they also are recruiting Trey Moss as well from Windermere High School down in Orlando, 6'3", 175-pound point guard. So shows once again that they are continuing to cast a wide net there with recruiting. So obviously we'll keep you updated on basketball coverage, basketball recruiting coverage as it unfolds. Mentioned at the outset of the show that it's been a busy week for football too. So now looking at the 2021 class, they have five guys in the fold. Again, we should also mention that since last time we talked to you, they've added a new quarterback into the room as a transfer from Iowa State, Rial Mitchell. Kind of an interesting development there where he is, Sam, he told you that he's hoping to get the waiver. He expects to get the waiver and be eligible right away?
Yeah. He said that he anticipates on getting, that hardship waiver right away and coming in and doing what he can to make that quarterback room better. That came as a surprise to me that he's going to get that right away. But they look at him as somebody who can, take the reins of the position after Anthony Russo he already graduates, but after he leaves this after the 2020 season. So they definitely have a lot of interest in making him their quarterback of the future.
Yeah, well, and that'll be interesting to follow too, because I think, and again, this is just supposition here, and we can debate this a little bit. I think, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I think it might say as much, it's early in his career, but I think it might say as much about what they think about Kanik Bonner-Stewart as much as it could kind of give us an indication of whether or not he's the quarterback of the future. It will be interesting. And again, I think fans lose sight of this sometimes. You add a lot of depth at the quarterback position and you try to get as many talented quarterbacks as you can in the room. And maybe one of them eventually leaves, like in Temple's case, Todd Senteo. We all know the stories about guys that have left other programs, transferred somewhere else, gone on to the NFL. But yeah, Mitchell comes in, will compete with Trad Beatty, obviously compete Anthony Russo, barring any sort of minor miracles, will be the starter again this season. So he enters the program now as a dual threat guy. And then also when you look ahead to the 2021 class, we can talk about this now. One of the key pieces of that class could be Justin Lynch, the younger brother of Jordan Lynch from Mount Carmel High School out in Chicago. Again, the staff can't speak on the record about these guys until they sign their national letter of intent. If you missed it a couple months ago, Sam Newman talked to Justin Lynch, did a great job on that story. Has, some great quotes from him, some great quotes and some audio from his brother. I think he'll factor heavily into the mix, and you're looking at some of those potential quarterbacks of the future. Again, I think to me, and again, let me know if you guys feel differently, I think them bringing in Mitchell might be a little bit more of an indication of what they think of Kanik Bonner-Stewart right now. Now, again, maybe next year Kanik Bonner-Stewart turns things around and is still in the program, but I think my guess would be if they were seeing a little bit more what they liked out of Kanik Bonner-Stewart, that maybe you don't go after a guy like Mitchell. How do you guys feel about it?
I feel the same way that you do, John. Because if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, Mitchell is going to have 3 years of eligibility. Granted, he sits behind Russo this year. And for all what we know, he can start the next two seasons. That allows somebody like Justin Lynch to take that redshirt year. He's going to be a 17-year-old freshman. So the likelihood of him coming in and starting as a true freshman are kind of low. And then if they're that confident, I mean, you can go from Mitchell to Lynch without really much of a blink. But, that's all hearsay, kind of projection. But I agree with you. It didn't seem like Kanik Bonner-Stewart might be long for their future plans. But obviously that's speculation. But like you said, John, I don't really see how this bodes positively for KBS out of this.
So yeah, Sam, with that, I think the quarterback room's getting a little bit crowded. But as Sam mentioned, I think the way you're looking at it is Russo, Mitchell, and Lynch for the future of the program.
So when you look ahead to the 2021 class, Temple now has five verbals in the fold. The biggest addition since we last talked to you last week was the addition of Johnny Martin III from Highland High School over in South Jersey. And I think we talked about this last week. It's obviously for every program, it's going to be really interesting. I think the fall is going to be crazy because, you know, for the sake of this country, hopefully things continue to trend in a positive direction. Hopefully there will be football. Hopefully there will be high school football. But one thing we know is that the programs, and this is especially big for Temple, they have not had the ability to host camps. And that's been such a foundation of what Temple does, going back to Al Golden, through, you know, on up through Steve Dazio, Matt Rule, Jeff Collins, and now under Rod Carey, they've continued the camps. There's been no real true summer evaluation for these programs, and Temple might be in an interesting position where, sure, they could lose a very talented player to a Power Five program. There's always the possibility of that happening. That's part of the process. But I think that in kind of observing from a distance, it looks like their approach has been, we're going to take guys that we're really firm on instead of just taking more commitments. But so far, early in the early stages of assembling this class, you know, fan base is obviously they want what they want. They say, you got to get into Florida and get a guy. You know, you got to keep your strong foothold in North Jersey and South Jersey where you've gotten players. You got to stay strong in South Jersey. You want to recruit nationally. Well, so far, Temple, of this five-person class, Johnny Martin III, you have one of the top players in South Jersey who had high major offers. You got a kid from Mount Carmel High School that produced Donovan McNabb and Justin Lynch, who we just talked about. Sam did a story on Jalen McMurray from the DMV from Gonzaga High School down in D.C., one of the better players down there. Again, chose Temple, committed to Temple over some high major programs. You have Malachi Lowry, a safety from Florida, so you get a player from Florida. And then a couple months ago, they got a verbal commitment from Malik Cooper from St. Joe's Prep, obviously has been one of not just the best programs in the state, in the city, but nationally. And it's been a good stretch for Gabe Infante. Their running backs coach gets a guy like Johnny Martin. If you read Sam's story, sorry, it was Tom McNuto's story. Tom is back writing for us. Didn't mean to deny Tom credit on his story there. But if you read Tom's story, you can see that Johnny talked about Gabe Infante. Of course, Gabe Infante says, yeah, you remind me a little bit of DeAndre Swift. If he's anything like DeAndre Swift, Temple's going to be in really good shape there. But a good week or a good stretch for Gabe Infante, because when he came in, the fan base obviously wondered, what kind of impact is he going to make with recruiting? It always comes down to recruiting. And he's gotten a guy from St. Joe's Prep. He helped him get a guy from St. Joe's Prep. And now helped him get a guy from South Jersey who, again, had multiple Power Five offers. So far, they've been able to dip into you know, different areas of the country and kind of expand their recruiting footprint, excuse me. So it's early, but, you know, it's a five-person class so far with a lot more to come, but it looks like they're off to a pretty decent start in 2021.
Yeah, and you have to look at it as a quality over quantity right now. I know people look at Boston College getting all these commits. I know at one point they got like six commits in 10 days, and they want that for Temple, but you know, right now, with everything that's happening, you're not going to get that amount of kids to commit without seeing the campus. So I think the quality of prospects that they've been able to get so far for this 2021 class is really something Temple fans should be happy about and not really overthink or overlook. I mean, I think Rod Carey and his staff have done an excellent job making the most of the situation at hand. And I mean, like you said, John, you know, have a footprint all over the country right now, and that's kind of what the staff has wanted to do. And you know, they've done it so far.
So again, just a reminder, there's a lot of stuff on the site that's gone up over the past week. There's Tom's story on Johnny Martin III, talking to Tom about why he decided to commit to Temple. Sam Newman's story on Jalen McMurray, just, you know, talking about why he chose Temple out of Gonzaga High School. You can check out his story on the site. Graham Foley talked to Keyshawn Jones, who just landed a Temple offer. He's an offensive tackle from Centralia High School out in Illinois. Graham also talked to Jordan Burrell from Blythewood High School down in South Carolina. He's a fairly highly recruited guy. Talked briefly to Graham about Temple, his thoughts on Temple and this Temple offer. So, again, I think it's going to be a busy summer and certainly an interesting fall. So there's plenty of football coverage to check out on the site as well. Again, a reminder that we're still running that 60-day free trial offer if you want to check it out. Could be a good Father's Day gift. Could be a good gift for your brother or any Temple fan that comes to mind for you. Again, that runs through May 31st. 60 days of free access to the site, to our premium content, and the message boards and everything. Again, if the past couple months have been any indication, there's going to be a lot more recruiting coverage coming your way. So be sure to check that out. We've got some mailbag questions as well. We'll get to the stuff on the football board here. We'll get to these. The first question comes from Mission Man. So he basically, this is a football question here. It's a longer question. He's asking how Temple's facilities, living quarters, related amenities, meal programs match up to their competitors for football and basketball. I mean, the Blue Bloods are the Blue Bloods. I mean, at Michigan, Ohio State, when it comes to football, LSU, I think we'd be foolish to say that Temple's facilities stack up to theirs. I mean, even in the American, UCF has great facilities. How does Temple stack up facilities-wise? I mean, I think the football facilities have certainly gotten a lot better. I think what's helped them more than anything has been just their success with the draft. When he's talking about academic support, another thing that's come out since we talked last week is Temple once again in the top five nationally in APR numbers, which is a huge deal when they're mentioned with Stanford's and the Northwestern's of the world. So I think their living facilities and football facilities are up there. I don't think they're up there with the, again, like the Blue Bloods of the world, and maybe basketball too, with Duke, Kansas, Kentucky. We know about the basketball program's upgrades. They're adding a brand new weight room. They're upgrading the basketball facility again for basketball. I know that they've moved, you know, we've been able to see that it looks like the whole team is living off campus down the street at the Nest. I think they wanted to get all those guys in the single rooms there. So I think they're making progress in that area, but, you know, and I think they're on par with the teams in their conference. And again, guys, feel free to chime in here. I don't know that they're where, again, on the football side of it, they're not Ohio State. And on the basketball side of it, I don't think they're in the realm of Kentucky, to answer the question there.
Yeah, I think if a prospect is going to choose Temple over a Power 5 school, it's not going to be because of the facilities. And that's not a knock at Temple's facilities. I think that they're up there. Are they Power 5 level? No, but that comes with, you know, the territory. But I think, you know, you look at the brotherhood that they've been able to create, the family-like atmosphere, and obviously the NFL numbers, and, you know, just developing players not only as you know, to the next level, but as men and student-athletes as well, because, Sean, you spoke about the academics. So there's a lot of things in the consideration, but I don't think those really are going to play as big of a part for athletes as much as what they feel is a better fit if they're going to choose Temple over a Power 5 school, like, say, like Boston College or Virginia or some school like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one thing that's just like worth saying is that although their facilities are not Power 5 level, they're not, you know, top facilities in the country, they're probably just like one step below. Like Temple basketball and football both have really, really nice facilities, and, you know, they're able to recruit these kids that are around getting high major offers. So I think it says a lot about the program and kind of where the direction they're moving in.
Yeah, and it's such a varied and long debate. Again, you can go to some Power 5 schools and look at their gyms. It would just take so long to parse out to talk about. Some Power 5 and some high major programs don't have the nicest looking arenas or don't always have the nicest looking weight rooms, but they kind of kill it in another area. Again, we've talked so many times before and earlier in this podcast where, as a basketball program, for example, Temple really kind of has a high major tradition, and they really do have high major facilities. You have, we've said it so many times before, a 10,200 seat arena, a relatively new practice facility that every NBA team uses when they come into Philly to play the Sixers, and one that's getting another $1 million worth of upgrades, more training table stuff. Everybody's raved about the job that Brady Welch has done with their strength and conditioning and nutrition program. So the facilities are up there. Again, do they compare with the national elite? No, but I think they're where they need to be in terms of their conference peers. Next question, football related from the message board. The screen name is Malenko. How likely is it that the staff brings in an additional transfer or two, a defensive end or safety that can play right away? For those on the current roster, who would you project to start and contribute at these positions? We talked about this before. There's going to be a little bit more roster attrition. Kyle has pointed out on our message boards that you're probably going to see a couple more departures. Kevon Bruton has entered the transfer portal since. The couple guys are going to be leaving to make room for some other guys to come in. How likely is it that they bring an additional transfer to a defensive end or safety? Possibly. Again, I mean, those could be positions of need. I wouldn't say that Malenko's wrong in guessing there. I think it just really depends. I think that they're going to add, it might sound so basic to say this, but I think that they're going to add a grad transfer where it makes sense. You saw them do that at center, of course, where they have, you know, some familiarity there, at center where they can plug and play a guy that they have coached before from Northern Illinois. Why am I blanking on his name, guys?
Perez,
sorry. You know, and it might make sense there. You know, it makes sense when you look at the safety position. But again, if they're really high, it's such a hard season to evaluate it because we don't know what preseason camp's going to look like. But if the progress that Amir Tyler has made at safety has really been as good as advertised, you know, maybe he's ready to roll. We see again that Kevon Bruton has left the program. Not his fault that Jeff Collins tried comparing him to Brian Dawkins a couple years ago because he wore number 20. I cringed when he said that. It's never fair for a coach to do that, but Jeff liked creating buzz and hyperbole, but he leaves the program. But I don't know, does a guy like Trey Blair come in from Haverford High School and play and contribute right away at safety? Does Deshaun Winston really make a jump, you know, in the offseason? MJ Griffin, a guy that they've been high on out of Saline High School in Michigan. It depends. I think, obviously, if something makes sense, yes. But I don't know. They might be done at safety. I think if there's a defensive lineman that they could add into the mix, maybe. But, yeah, I think you're going to see a little bit more roster movement again because I think you're going to see a couple more guys hit the portal to make room. And, again, if you're a subscriber, you can see how Kyle has outlined stuff. Doing a state of the roster evaluation, you can see where they stand with the number of scholarships available. There are a few over right now, so a couple guys are going to leave, but could be an area where they add a transfer, but we'll just kind of have to see how things play out there. Next question on the message board here, mailbag question, football related. This comes from the screen name Bridge Kid. There's been a lot of discussion. Bridge Kid, I think, is one of our newer subscribers, so thank you for joining. We appreciate it. There's been a lot of discussion regarding the offensive weapons returning for the Owls, the quarterback, running back, receivers, offensive line. Was wondering who is the projected starter tight end. I recall Temple getting Tyler Sear as a transfer from Pitt. What is the status of Tyler and overall projections regarding the tight end position? I think the guy that immediately stands out because they talked about him a lot at the end of the season. And in the very abbreviated time that we had to talk to them in the early stages of spring ball before Temple got shut down due to the pandemic, they certainly seem to be high on David Martin Robinson, another guy who is, you know, one of those guys that could be a, you know, regardless of where you put him on the field, could be a tight end or a bigger wide receiver at 6'4", 245 from Hemfield High School in Landisville, further out in Pennsylvania. They seem to like him a lot. You know, his nickname is DMR. Rod talks about him a lot. I think that he might have the early leg up, but it all depends on how they use their tight ends. You know, Aaron Jarman could be in the mix. Tyler Sear keeps getting described as a guy that's really, really tough. They seem to like him a lot. And then also you have Darius Pittman, who's not on the official roster yet, but was part of their recruiting class as a transfer, right?
Yeah, out of Purdue.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's just a clearinghouse thing. He's not on the roster yet, but I would have to think that he'll figure into the mix. Again, if he's not listed on the roster come August and we start getting some access, media access for preseason camp, I will certainly ask about him there. But I don't know how you guys feel about it. I think David Martin Robinson might be the pass-catching guy, the guy that they look to get into the flow of the offense as more of a down-the-field guy. Tyler Sear, again, I think has that ability, could be a good blocker. Aaron Jarman comes into the mix, and then you have Pittman as well. How do you guys see that position playing out?
Yeah, like you said, I think David Martin Robinson is, you know, the starter. That's the bottom line. He's going to be the starter. I feel like Sear and Jarman are most likely to split time as that tight end two. Maybe they have a little bit of an edge with Sear probably being a better blocker. And if they want to use that 12 personnel, and have that two tight end formation, have Sear and David Martin Robinson out there. I mean, by all means, that's probably something they would do. Because last season we saw sometimes they would have Kenny Yeboah and David Martin Robinson out there at the same time. So, yeah, I think like you said, John, I think David Martin Robinson has that position on lock unless something happens between now and then.
All right, so now we'll head to the basketball side of things for mailbag questions. JHG722 reprising an old question that he's brought up, which I certainly appreciate. How are your dogs? You guys do not have dogs, right, Sam and Sam?
I have a dog.
I'm dogless.
Sam Newman, talk to us about your dog. His name, her name.
His name is Ollie. He'll be 8 years old on actually in a week or two on June 10th. He still acts like he's a puppy though. You know, we have he's like 10, 12 pounds, and he'll jump from like high surfaces and then end up being limping for the rest of the day because he still thinks that he's younger than he actually is. But other than that, he's been good, going on lots of walks and getting lots of treats. So, I mean, he's happy to have us home. He's just exhausted by the end of the day. He's not getting enough sleep during the day.
What kind of dog is he, Sam?
He's a he's a rare breed, actually. He's a Caton de Tulier. So they're so the name originates from Madagascar. So they were like used to be like fancy, the famous people or wealthy people in France had like them as like their dogs, and they like shipwrecked and landed on Madagascar. So their name Caton de Tulier. So Caton means cotton in French because their fur is like cotton kind of. And then Thule is the port in Madagascar that they shipwrecked on. So they're Madagascar's national dog, actually.
Did we just start a dog podcast?
And we might have, actually.
Did we start it with some serious knowledge from Sam Newman there? That was great.
Yeah. I mean, I really have because, you know, when we got him, I didn't know much about it. But, you know, there's a whole segment on the Animal Planet and all that stuff. So, you know, I've kept myself up to date on it. I know what I'm talking about.
I texted Graham to see how his dog is, but I know he's in a meeting, so maybe he'll get back to me, maybe not.
He's in a meeting with the Phillies right now. Gracie, I hope, is still doing well. We saw her on Zoom last week.
Yeah.
Riggins, Kyle's dog, is doing well. Got to see him very, very briefly when we stopped by to see Kyle's son. My dog, Sam, is doing okay. I mean, he turned 13 this year. His eyesight is definitely starting to go, which is kind of sad to see, but he's still moving around, still eating. He's still adorable as always, and I'm still obsessed with him, so still love him. So appreciate the question there, JHG. A couple more here on the basketball side to finish things out. Next question from North Broad on the message board. You were handed a 100-sided die. I guess it should be dice or die. Die is plural for dice, right? If it lands on any of the winning 99 sides, you get $1 million. There's one side that brings instant and painless death. You must predetermine the total number of rolls before the first roll. And if you land on the death roll, your next of kin does not receive any of the winnings from previous successful rolls. How many times do you roll, and what are the chances we get LG3? I'll hang up and listen. LG3 meaning Lynn Greer III. So from following here, North Broad is kind of poking fun at the fact that we get a lot of questions about whether or not Temple's going to get Lynn Greer III. I don't know how you guys are reading that.
So we're rolling dice with 100 sides.
I'll roll it three times.
We get a certain amount of rolls, and it has to land on a certain number for us to get Lingre, for Temple to get Lingre the Third, or it lands on a number, and our next of kin. What happens to our next of kin?
Are you reading this on the ball? I'll read it again. You're handed a 100-sided die. Okay. If it lands on any of the winning 99 sides, you get $1 million. There's one side that brings instant and painless death. You must predetermine the total number of rolls before the first roll. And if you land on the death roll, your next of kin does not receive any of the winnings from previous successful rolls. How many times do you roll, and what are the chances we get Lynn Greer III? I'll hang up and listen. So they're two separate things.
99 sides of $1 million and one side of
instant and painless death. But if you roll, say you roll like 10 times and the 9 times you got 1 million, but then the 10th time you get the instant death, your next of kin doesn't get all those winnings.
Oh. Okay.
So you have to say how many times you want to roll the die with taking the chance. I said 3. I think 3 is enough. 3 is enough for me. John, you got an answer here?
I'll push it to 5.
Yeah, I'll go 5 too.
What about Lynn Greer the Third?
The chances they get Lynn Greer the Third. We get asked about this so often. Again, I always try to be as accurate and as fair as possible. Pat Egan teases me, our friend from 97.5, the Fanatic, and says he teases me because it's a popular buzz phrase, and we say these things are fluid, but they really are. With Lingerie the Third's recruitment, you know, I understand why Temple fans want him in the program. He can shoot. He can definitely play. He was at Roman Catholic. He transferred down to Oak Hill, came back to Roman. Now he's going down to IMG for his senior season, reclassified. At one point, it looked like Temple was – like it just didn't seem like he was that interested in Temple. He keeps talking about them, keeps saying they're family, they're in the mix. And then in the fall, he was set to take an official visit, and I was starting to hear that it looked likely that he was coming to Temple. Then he decides that he's going to reclassify. I think, and again, Aaron McKee, Chris Clark, everyone on the staff, they cannot talk about him on the record. I think Temple's position would be like, you know, we like you. You know, we're family. There's a spot here if you want it. Do I think he signs with Temple ultimately? I do not. I think if Lynn, my educated guess would be if Lynn wanted to come to Temple, he knows that he has a shot with Temple. I don't know if he wants to continue to draw out his recruitment. If he wants to, that's fine. But Lynn Greer could also go down to IMG, and he has every right to, and really take his game to the next level. I think he's certainly skilled. I think there are aspects of his game that he needs to work on. If he goes down to IMG and his recruitment really blows up, then good for Lynn, and that shows that it was a right move on his part. I think that if he ends up at Temple, it will be because he sees Temple as home, and that he might have – and I don't mean for it to sound like this, because I think Temple's got some good players coming into the mix, including Quincy Adam-McCoy, including Jeremiah Williams, who we talked to earlier. I think that Lynn Greer, he hasn't told me this specifically, I want to make that abundantly clear, but I don't know how else we could make the conclusion other than to think that I think that Lynn Greer sees Temple as they're always going to be there. And I think at some point Temple's going to say, hey, we're here for a certain amount of time, but we're moving on. And I think I would be surprised if he ends up at Temple. I think you might see him try to end up at a place like Oregon or Gonzaga, like go far away from home. And if things don't work out there, maybe he looks at transferring home. He keeps Temple in the mix. He keeps him in the mix. But I think the chances of Temple getting him, and I know that North Broad is being partially sarcastic here with the question, but just purely for the sake of information, we'll talk about it. I think the chances of him ending up at Temple are slim.
Yeah, and John, I mean, we already mentioned what they have to look at the 2021 class. So, I mean, Temple could say, like, we only have this amount of scholarships. We really like these guys. And at the end of the day, like, they're not going to wait for him. Because if, you know, you get Stevie and you get Zach Hicks who give you your commitment, it's going to be hard for them to take him too.
Yeah. All right, so last question here from the message board. In late September, and this is from Mission Man as well, in late September, we offered Archbishop John Carroll's class of 21 player John Camden, Memphis, a number of ACC, and I'm assuming he means Big Ten programs have also offered. All the recent comments and conversations are about others. Any updates on Aaron and the staff's current interest involvement with him? So it's a good question, Mission Man, but to actually clear this up, Temple, to my knowledge, and I looked into this before we started recording, Temple hasn't offered him yet. Not to say that they couldn't at some point, but I understand that he's in the Rivals 150 for the class of 2021, but I'm not sure. I haven't seen him play with my own eyes. I've talked to a bunch of different people about him. I think everybody agrees that he's a solid player. How good he is depends on who you talk to, but Temple has not offered him yet. So that's not to say that they couldn't at some point. Again, repeating a tried and true phrase, these things are fluid. They could end up offering him. But I don't know. I don't know that he's going to get a Temple offer. I don't know that he ends up at Temple, but he has not, to my knowledge, received a Temple offer yet. So good question. I know it's a name that gets thrown around out there, but Temple has actually not offered him. We talked earlier in the podcast about guys that they are interested in. Again, it's getting into early June. Obviously, we're in the midst of an interesting and unprecedented recruiting cycle due to the pandemic, but I don't understand why John Carroll's name gets thrown out there, but to my knowledge, they actually have not offered him yet.
Yeah, looking into it, I was reading something from Corey Evans, who's a national basketball analyst at Rivals, and he was saying that, you know, right now Miami and Virginia Tech are the two to beat. So that's definitely interesting there, but like you said, John, it doesn't seem like Temple's at the forefront of his recruitment.
Yeah, and I don't know. Again, like, it's hard. This is where it gets kind of interesting with recruiting. You know, maybe Miami and Virginia Tech are better fits for him. If Temple hasn't offered him yet, maybe there is a reason. And again, I've heard nothing but good things about him personally. And again, obviously, if he's getting those types of offers, he's probably a very solid player. But they haven't offered him yet, and maybe it's just a direction that Temple doesn't want to go in with this class, or maybe they have their thoughts and feelings on him. But no, they haven't offered him yet. So as of now, I don't think that they're super involved with him. Again, that could always change, but it's certainly a good question. I understand why fans wonder about it, but to my knowledge, they have not offered him yet. So that'll do it for this week. Again, I want to say thank you to Quincy Adam McCoya and Jeremiah Williams. They joined us again for a Zoom call earlier today. That story is up on the site now, or that conversation is up on the site now. You can hear our entire conversation with him. You heard a couple of clips from that conversation in the podcast here. Thank you to all of you for submitting mailbag questions. And we will be back with you next week.
Hold on, John, before we go, I have an answer from Graham about his dog.
Okay. Wow. How about that?
He said he said she's doing really well, loves having everyone home, and is super energetic, getting a ton of walks, old but hanging in there. Also, my cousin's got a new puppy, so lots of dog love.
Here we go. Talking about getting things in right at the end. right down to the wire. Graham, I hope you appreciate just how precise the end of a podcast needs to be. And I literally had signed off, and Sam Cohen runs into what our virtual space would be saying, hold it! Don't stop recording just yet. We got to get the news in about Gracie. So, Graham.
Well worth it.
Wherever you are, I hope you appreciate being included right there at the end. But I'll allow it because we love you and we love dogs here at owlscoop.com. So, again, thank you to everybody for listening. And we look forward to talking to you next week.